is CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor. Here's John Batchelor.
Indo-Pacific, Oceania, all these sovereign states and powers, much in the story of the competition between the People's Republic of China, the United States, and its allies. Cleo Pascal, who is traveling, she's in the nation's capital now, and very kind to come on to comment on what looks to be a breaking development on this contest between the PRC, always looking to use cash and sharp elbows, to flip a country or a sovereign state or an island from the U.S. side to the PRC side. This particular example is Reuters. U.S. cautions after Hawaii neighbor Kiribati gets Chinese police. Chinese police are something that was a tell when they moved into the Solomon Islands, so I immediately knew to come to Cleo. The opening paragraph, the United States cautioned Pacific Island nations against assistance from Chinese security forces after Reuters reported the Chinese police are working in the remote atoll nation of Kiribati, a neighbor of Hawaii. I'll stop there, Cleo, and come to you on this. This is a surprise to me, although now that I've been educated by you, this push could be on in many islands. Kiribati wasn't one we've talked about recently. Where is it? What does it represent, this report? Good evening to you.
Good evening. Kiribati is a country of about 120,000 people spread out over a huge section of the Pacific, of the Central Pacific, just below the equator, some of it just above. World War II people might know this as the location of the Battle of Tarawa and the Battle of Macon. These are not inconsequential strategic locations. There's a lot of old U.S. military installation there, like, for example, on Canton Island. Kiribati switched from Taiwan to China at the same time the Solomon Islands did, within about a week of each other in 2019. And it hasn't been quite as widely reported on, but there's been similar kind of activities on the ground. We know that the Chinese are looking at a lot of those strategic locations like Canton Island. They said they're going to build tourism up there on an island that has, I think, a few dozen people on it. But these are... you heard in the description from Reuters, they say they're remote, but they also say they're next to Hawaii. They're on the routes from Hawaii to Australia, and they're highly strategically important. This is completely consistent, this sort of activity, with what we saw when China announced its vision, China Pacific Islands vision, supported by its five-year plan, which highlighted things like defense cooperation, police cooperation, support in forensics, all that kind of thing. And it's fine for the U.S. to say they shouldn't be using the Chinese, but the U.S., again, this is a place where so many Americans, especially the Marines, fought and died. The U.S. doesn't even have an embassy there. They were supposed to open one up, but it hasn't been opened yet.
The Reuters reporting that this is strategic because it has one of the world's biggest economic zones, exclusive economic zones, 3.5 million square kilometers. This part attracted me. China has announced plans to rebuild a World War II U.S. military airstrip on Canton Island, meaning that they're not going to hide the expectation of a conflict with the U.S. and interrupting the traffic from the Hawaii Islands to reinforce the Philippines or Japan or Taiwan would necessarily be threatened by an airstrip on Kiribati. Is this a done deal now, Cleo? Is there no point in complaining about it anymore? The Chinese have what they want.
Well, you need to give them a viable alternative. And in fact, there's an old treaty between the sort of U.S. Tarawa Friendship Treaty that forbids the development of military installations by countries that are not the U.S. So the U.S. has a lot of cards to play, but currently it's not playing many of them at all. And this has been a zone where Australia has said, don't worry, we're going to take care of it, and to a certain degree New Zealand, and they talk about the Pacific Island Forum and all of these kind of talking shops. But meanwhile, on the ground, the leaders of Kiribati who want to deliver economic development for their people and internal flights and ferries and things like that are getting what they need to be reelected, they think, from the Chinese. So unless there's something viable that is being offered as an alternative, it's understandable that this is going on. Now, of course, we know that down the line, what is looked at as support becomes dependency, and after that becomes vassalhood. And that would also be helpful for people to, perhaps from the region, people from the Solomons who have lived through this, to go and talk to the people of Kiribati about what's going to be coming down the pike if they stay with the Chinese. But at this stage in the development of these kinds of relationships, unless there's a viable alternative, it's difficult to wag fingers and seem credible.
What does it mean, Chinese police? What does that actually represent? They're there to do what, and what do they bring along with them?
So that is a really good question, because the term police sounds like something civilian. But it, of course, in China, where they have a 99.9% conviction rate, the police aren't there to gather information and put together a crime to the best of their abilities with the knowledge that they have. They're there to enforce the will of the state, and addicting local proto-authoritarians to having their own security force is kind of a gateway drug to bring them into Chinese vassalhood. You know, they're teaching Chinese policing methods, which is essentially a personal security force for the leadership. So that's exactly right to highlight what this word police means. We know that through this five-year plan that the PRC also wants to gain a toehold in things like forensics. What that'll do is it'll give an opening to Chinese organized crime, which acts as a shock force for the Chinese state. So they may be catching criminals that are competing with Chinese organized crime, but I don't expect those Chinese police forces or the equipment that they're giving, the forensic support and things like that, to be arresting anybody that is helpful to the Chinese state.
We go to the Central Pacific, the Palau and the Marshall Islands. They're part of the security that the U.S. offers, but there's a bill or there's money pending in Congress. Can you give us an update, Cleo? We have a couple of minutes.
Yeah, sure. Thank you. So while Kiribati and Canton is important for the route from Hawaii down to Australia, the three countries of the Central Pacific, Palau, Marshall Islands, and Federated States of Micronesia, are foundational for U.S. defense architecture in the Pacific. Those three countries are independent countries, but they've given over exclusive defense rights to the U.S. It's what allows the U.S. to get from Hawaii to the Philippines to Taiwan up to Guam, the Commonwealth of Northern Mariana, is unmolested. This is an area that's the size of the continental United States. And as part of this agreement, every 20 years, the financial and services components are renegotiated and renewed.
We have 30 seconds, Cleo. Go ahead, 30 seconds.
They've been renegotiated, but they have been renewed because they've been caught up in this mess in Congress, and we're waiting for this $2.3 billion for three countries over 20 years offset to come through. Without it, the Chinese are on the ground creating havoc and undermining the U.S. from within.
And Palau needs the money most. Are they waiting still, or is it too late?
No, they're still waiting, and it looks like they're going to probably have to cut pensions and raise taxes, and it's going to severely damage the political future of the current president,
right,
who's up for re-election.
Cleo Pascal, Foundation for the Defense of Democracies, Oceania. I'm John Batchelor.